Right then. So, Future Sounds, Season 3, Episode 4. And it's me, Rob, with Mr. Patrick Fakeman. And we're just doing a little intro, aren't we, though?
We are. And it's been a while since it's been me and you. Various commitments, movements.
All kinds of movements.
Life things. It feels like it's been a long time since I've had my headphones on and I've microphone shoved in my face.
I think we did like a set a little while ago, but we must have done something since then.
I think we've done a little bit since then, but it always feels very long time ago when you're chatting to like a set.
Yeah, and Tom's been taking... Tom's been doing the heavy lifting, man. Tom's been doing a lot of the interviews, of which we will intro in a sec.
Yeah.
So, thank God for him.
But just as a spoiler for people, we do have a number of widening the team intros coming up. Everyone doing
we
a little
are
bit of a little chat with a few people here and there. So you've got this season to be a bumper crop of engagement. And...
Hey, what have you been up to? What you've been listening to? What you've been doing?
Do you know what? Well, in terms of what I've been up to, enjoying a little bit of the British sunshine.
Lovely,
I know we've got a big American audience, but I know for those in the UK, it's getting warmer.
It's getting warmer. They love our chat as well. They love weather chat. They expect it from Brits, quite frankly. So we've got a couple
of course
we'll
they do.
Fish news later.
Yeah. it's like when I watched the Formula One. It's like tyre chat. It's like, oh, I love a bit.
Well,
I
forgot you're a big F1 fan.
Fabulous stuff.
How's that going? Is that a good thing? A bad thing?
It depends who you enjoy watching. Overall, a little bit of a weak season, but I'm much more. I'm a tech geek, so I thoroughly enjoy. Actually, I thoroughly enjoy.
you start the tyre chat.
To one side. No. Things have been going well, plodding along. In terms of what I've been listening to, a couple of little things, actually, I think it's worth throwing out there. The first one is I was very surprised as of 3 days ago when our good friend, and I think he was on your former show, Highway Superstar.
If he did, I was absent in one of my rare absences. But he was definitely on Space Jam.
I reckon he didn't.
So I think and Joe he was on Space Jam on Jack's show. But nice.
I've spoken to him IRL. In fact, he stayed at my house a few times, actually.
There you go, you know him very well.
But to the point, though, he has started off 2024 with a new release, Caribbean Romance. I was going to say Chemical Romance there, but it's Caribbean Romance. And it's kind of a little bit of a departure from his usual work. So for those who are unaware, Highway Superstar... is a wonderful guy called Alex who hails from Israel and continues to do so, I believe, who is very much the early days of synthwave production. In fact, I think he created the synthwave producer groups that are on Facebook that you're no longer on. So he's one of the OG producers, as it were, but has been quiet for a couple of years. He released an album not too long ago that was just released on vinyl with Time Slave. I still
got to drop that in. We get paid every time we say it.
yeah, we do. They say, but no, he's released a new single. As I say, Caribbean Romance. I think it looks like it's going to be the signal of a new album. But he advertises it as taking off on Highway Airlines, I think I want to say. But it's got that, what's the vibe? It's beachy vibe, obviously, given that it's Caribbean Romance. It's got that kind of, I'm being tested on what that actual phrase is now. It's got a panpipey kind of vibe to it. Thoroughly enjoyable, nice, slow, smooth synths, which you can't say very easily.
I don't think I've heard it yet. I'm going to check it out on your recommendation.
No, check it. I believe as of today, which went on the date that we're recording, which to give away any mystique is Monday the 29th of April, it is only on YouTube, YouTube channel. But do go check it out because it's been playing a few times in the house. I've enjoyed it as the weather has slowly improved. And then just very quickly, my other one, which I think has been out for a little bit longer now, is our good friend Yato. Yes. Who has recently collabed with a band called Visors, and they have released a bubblegum synth pop favorite of mine called The Scene. I don't think it's referring
our
to
scene.
Any particular scene or our scenes. or the yacht rock scene, no, but I think Visors as a whole, hadn't heard much of them, but looking at a bit of their biography, they're kind of inspired by Gorillaz.
Okay.
There's definitely some kind of synth poppy. I read somewhere about sort of Chic-esque guitar licks, which is definitely the vibe. It is very much so. And so with Yate,
a bit Daft Punk-y.
Well, it's obviously Yate is a band, aren't they? So Alex from Yate bringing his vocals. And I've noticed that he's been doing some more interesting, wider spread collaborations, as is his way. So yes, Visors featuring Yate, The Scene, is also a thoroughly enjoyable track for these blossoming summer days.
Blossoming, but it's still been raining like a mother. But yeah, as you say, yeah, today it remembered it's meant to be spring and it's got a little...
Well, when I say blossoming summer days, I do actually mean the last 12 hours.
One day.
It hasn't been much more than that.
I'm getting a bit fed up. Hey, but man, have you heard Luxury Elite's new album dropped a couple of hours ago? Talk Soup.
So you're so on it. That I feel completely un on it. Have you?
Yeah, really quickly, because literally it's been like an hour and a half and I had to put the kid to bed. It's called Talk Soup. It's very good. What I've heard, it's got, you know what you're getting usually, but you know what you're getting is very good from Luxury Elite. But there are some kind of new Jack samples in there. There's one that sounds specifically Bobby Brownish, that kind of like, you know, in that early 90s New Jack period. And there's my favourite track on there so far is a track called Dream Girl, which has got a lovely, luxurious saxophone in it. But yeah, hot off the press. I've barely heard it, but it sounds great.
I'll give it
immediately after this.
Very often, the new Jack certainly sometimes, rightly or wrongly, can be a little bit reserved for future funk sometimes.
Yeah,
I'm thinking,
but it's given the Lux twist.
Absolutely. So I know I'm down intrigued for that. So that's what you've been listening to for the last 4 hours. Anything with
more
longevity?
Well, I really like Johnny Fallout's new album, which is carrying on his dabbling and dibbling in video game liquid drum and bass type stuff. It's called Concentric Circles, and it gets quite hard at times, and it's quite sort of more experimental, but it is rooted in that, you know, bringing back the old PS1 style menu screen drum bass licks. So that's been really good. And also, like, I really enjoyed, as we all did, the VSTV festival. So I dug in a little bit deeper and Basement Love, I went back and returned to an old album of theirs, and Division Street's entry into that online festival, it was recorded live and it looked higher production than some of the others, because they were actually in a, you know, like a sort of a theatre with several cameras and stuff. So live at the Academy, you can get that on Bandcamp right now, and I did, and that is their set from that, but it's also, you know, a set in its own right. It's about four or five songs, a little EP, and that I've been listening to loads as well, and it's really lovely to hear it with a completely live band, which is a little unusual in our scene. Dare I say, there'll be, you know, naysayers. Mm. That's not vaporwave, but it is, man.
Well, it immediately lends itself to the Pink Bird album from Donna Lenz, who do get their fair share of "You're Not Vaporwave."
Malarkey.
So that's a second wink to Tom in this chat.
Cheers,
whilst
Tom.
He's listening in and
to
editing.
Our dulcet tones.
Hi, Tom.
So yes, that's what we'll be doing. And I, as promised, I just want to give a shout out to Mr. Ace Buchanan, who of course has released on Time Slaves in the recent past. And he's going through, he's being very open and sharing a lot on his socials, but he's halfway through now, an 8 3-week cycles of chemotherapy for breast cancer, male breast cancer, which is very rare.
Gosh.
And he's doing great by all accounts, and he's smashing it, so we send him a lot of love.
Yeah, and we've been meaning to get online and say that in a pod format for some time, haven't we?
We haven't forgotten about you, Ace. You can nail it.
Absolutely not. Sending you all the good energy, all the positive stuff that's possibly needed, at least from me and you and anyone listening and everyone that knows.
Drop on his socials and say hello. So that's, I don't know, do we want to introduce Tom's?
Well, we could just cut it clean and he's just got to do it himself, but it doesn't sound that well, does it,
no,
when you do like that? So I'm thinking we probably need to do a little introduction. What you've got coming up, wonderful listener or listeners, it's Enzo and Tom did this.
I forgot Enzo was involved. Sorry, Enzo.
I think Enzo was also involved. If he wasn't, apologies,
no,
you're not
right,
going to hear him this week, but I think he was. They sat down with the wonderful Whitewoods and had a good chat about all things Vapor, as you would expect. Without further ado, here's our interview with Whitewoods.
This is season 3, episode 4 of Future Sounds FM. We've got an interview with Whitewoods. We're chatting a couple of new releases. We've got new single, Mr. Eyes Wide Shut, which is part of the Hot Takes compilation. And we're chatting about the recent re-release of Spaceship Earth on My Pet Flamingo.
And we've also got quite a few questions from Club Flamingo members and followers. And yeah, we've got quite a lot to talk about with one of the OGs, the true OGs of the scene. It's great to have you with us, mate.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's always good to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I think last time I saw you was in New York. Would have been around Econ 3, and we were doing the filming. And I can't remember where exactly in Brooklyn we caught up with you, but... Yeah. I'm happy to say there's quite a lot of progress being made with the edit at the moment. I'm working on it with the director. We're doing a lot. We've got a hell of a lot of it down. And yeah, we're going to have him on a podcast soon to talk about that in a bit more detail. But yeah, it's coming together.
Good. Yeah. I remember that day. It was you're having some problems with a rave happening downstairs, and you had to switch locations to record. And I was, That's you guys right. were on your toes for that day.
That's
that
right,
was,
yeah.
That was a hectic one.
Yeah, we had to shuffle a few people around in the end. It was a bit of a nightmare, but we managed to get out of it alive, and we got some really good footage. I think we might have interviewed Mesh on the same day, and possibly John Zabiel as well. We had even bigger audio problems there because there was some kind of, like you said, there was some kind of party going on in this shop that didn't normally have live music performing, and it was just the heaviest bass sounds coming through the floorboards. I'm surprised that they didn't let us know that was going to happen before we got there, but that's what it's like when you're trying to book locations in a foreign country at the last minute on the fly with a very small team and not much money. These things
hey man if it, you but, did it
yeah we're doing it. It's very much present tense at the moment, but it's coming together. It's coming
good
together. Anyway, why don't you tell us a bit about the new single and that compilation?
Well, I got a message from the guy over at Hot Takes, Young Shiro. He was just fishing for contributions to the Palestine Relief Fund album that they were putting together, and I hadn't recorded anything in a long time because, we were talking about kids and all of the time that you spend with your kids. And so, I didn't have anything, but I had been paying attention to the news just on Twitter. I don't really look at any other news sources, really. And it was saying some a lot of horrible shit. So I had scribbled down some words before he even reached out to me, just the things I had seen. And when he reached out to me, it just kind of happened over about a week or two. I just wrote down these lyrics for the album, and it kind of came out the way it did. I don't really know what else you would like to know about it. It's
I just think it's interesting that the vaporwave scene's quite good amongst other genres I've ever followed or been a part of, in that they can react to things like this really quickly, and there's like a collective endeavor to raise funds for causes when they come around, and it's quite powerful to see a community like that working that quickly to get something so creatively interesting and also for a good cause.
That is the strength of the internet, really. You can respond in real time, and that seems to be what's going on. But yeah, I haven't actually looked back on it yet because it just sort of happened.
I think your song's like the most directly relevant to the brief because it's like a very, very directly anti-war song with, like really, really direct lyrics that kind of, kind of speak of what's going on. I think like most people just contributed a track to try and raise some money, but I think you really like followed through on the brief.
Yeah, sort of. It was, let me try and put my thoughts in words here. I didn't want to make it too specific, but I also couldn't help but really put out there what was happening as far, it's not just about what's happening now. It almost seemed to me like it's what's been going on my whole life. I just wasn't aware of it as a kid about how the world really operates and how, you know, the business of America and other allies to America really, really operates. And the main export of, besides the US dollar, is war. It's sad, but I guess it's just the way it's got to be today. I don't know why. Apply to what's going on now and also just problems at large. It's not just about that one particular event that's happening in real time, but it could kind of be seen in other ways. But
yeah, I was just going to say that I like that it's an acoustic guitar driven song. It gives it like a timeless quality and like a kind of protest song, like from any decade, and it could be about any conflict. It has the kind of like Bob Dylan kind of quality to it, the fact that there's an acoustic guitar kind of centered in it. And it has like a kind of folkish quality, yeah, and timeless, yeah. You know, which is kind of all the more depressing, really, that like, you know, conflicts still rage on and kids still get caught up in it, you know. I found it quite poignant.
Yeah, that's how I got into music. I started off as that. I would play, you know, open mic nights and old folk songs and that kind of stuff. That's what really hooked me into the whole music thing online. And it wasn't what I did, you know, vaporwave came after that. Whatever vaporwave is, we always talking about it. But I don't know if acoustic guitars belong in vaporwave, but I think vaporwave is this, you know, it's a big bucket and it changes every day. And I think it's internet centered. So when you interact with it online, it just either clicks with you that you would call it something like that, or it doesn't. And I don't know who decides whether it is or not. I don't even think it matters. But the... I do think that it has some elements of that. I mean, that's the whole protest element is sort of what the song really stems from. But it also, it's like, how do we get here is another idea behind the song. It's weird that it's so normalized, you know. My whole life, I remember the, you know, pre-9/11 years, and I remember it, how different it became. And there was a time when there was a war that happened when I was a kid, the first Desert Storm War, and it was a thing, you know, it was a huge deal. And we weren't at war before that, and then it ended, and war kind of went away. But then after 9/11, it was just like, well, no, it's 24/7, you know, murder, death, kill. That's basically what has been happening the last 20 years.
And I think that's part of the technological rise of 24-hour TV and rolling news coverage and things like social media platforms, that you can open up any device and you're confronted with things that are happening. You're confronted with images that the news channels would have maybe filtered a little bit for you. Like, everything is there completely unfiltered.
Exactly. You're
confronted with it constantly. Because it feels like we're all old enough to kind of, like you said, remember those earlier conflicts that you alluded to there. But like, it feels like the thing that's fundamentally changed is the fact that we're forced to confront it. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it opens more people's eyes. But technology has its way of kicking you in the balls.
That's exactly my things. Experience, 100%. When I got the message from the Hot Takes guys, I wrote down the first verse of the song where baby faces in the rubble, mother's arms used to cuddle, because I'd seen these images on Twitter of dead babies in rubble. And it was just burned into my mind, especially being a father. You can't even fathom what must be going through the lives of many people right now. And a lot of other images, like there's a final verse talks of a, you know, a bulldozer running over a body. And I saw the most disgusting stuff that I've never seen of that kind of stuff. Maybe we should just change the topic, because I don't know. I can't. Let's talk about Spaceship Earth. Yeah.
Give a quick shout out on like not to bring the topic down again, but just associated with this, Hot Takes and Quiz are doing a streaming show in a few days' time. I don't know if I will be able to squeeze the podcast out before it, but you know, maybe people can watch on catch up. But yeah, the Hot Takes and Quiz are doing Vaporade for Palestinian Children's Relief Fund, so the same charity as the compilation, and there's some big artists like Frank Javsi, iClick, Pad Chennington, Fiber, Young Shiro and Skelly, Giant Claw, Luxury Elite, and Saint Pepsi are playing a streaming event. So if we manage to get this out before then, make sure to check it out. If you're listening retrospectively, like, go back and check it out and still make a donation to the fund and stuff. Oh yeah, Donor Lens are playing as well, but fuck those guys.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Spaceship Earth then. So we put out the vinyl to mark 10 years since its release on MPF recently, and it's like, it's clearly a really special album that resonates with people. Like, people have been asking, I think you had a lot of people asking you when you were going to do another vinyl release. We've always had people asking if we were ever going to do a repress. It's interesting because it's not explicitly, I mean, I'm putting words in your mouth here, but I think we said this when we talked about it for the filming. It's not explicitly a vaporwave record, but it definitely resonates with that crowd. Like, how did the album come about, and like, how do you feel about it now 10 years on?
Well, I think the reason it gets lumped in as vaporwave, and I mean, I'm go along with it, you know, I'm not going to fight that, as I think it's because, you know, most of what I experience as vaporwave is an audio visual experience, and the videos that go along with the songs on that album really hit home the aesthetic, as they say, of retro nostalgia, which nostalgia to me is the root of everything that I think about when people talk about vaporwave. If I try to find one common element that I see in everybody in my limited exposure, it seems to take me in a time machine back to when I was a kid in the 80s and 90s. And I'm sure it will continue to evolve and change, but that's how it started happening in my head. I think the album came out in 2013. So those songs, we were working on them for on and off just for about 2 or 3 years, I think, because it wasn't an album until John over at Business Casual sent us a message on SoundCloud and said, "Hey, I like your songs," and put another couple songs together, and we'll slap this thing out on my website and call it a day. So that's as boring as it gets, really. We got together, and me and my partner, Scott, he doesn't really do it anymore, but back then it was a duo instead of a solo thing. And there's just a lot going on with the internet and the technology at the time, what you were capable of creating just on your own. Because before that, I mean, you had to go, if you want to record an album, you had to go to a studio, you had to pay an engineer, you had to buy all this gear. All you really needed back in 2010, 2012, or whenever, was a laptop and Ableton Live. That's all we were using. And you could find some old...
This is why a lot of people make that punk analogy between vaporwave and punk.
Yeah.
The kind of low barrier to entry and technology being that kind of leveler of the playing field that made it accessible for people to get into all types of music production without requiring studio time.
Yeah.
And all of that. And yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's interesting because you've given it kind of a humble background, but there was something special about it. It's had, some of the tracks have had millions of plays on platforms like Spotify. The YouTube videos have you know, obviously had similar numbers as well. And it's an album that continues to be talked about. And yeah, despite you kind of looking back on the time quite humbly as something that almost came together by accident, I think it's clearly gone on to become like one of those totemic albums of that time.
Yeah. If it,
that's my take.
It anyway, certainly is a fan. It is the album that people talk about all the time, all the time. And I'm planning on doing a live show in a month or so, and I'm basically just going to try and play at least half of that album for everybody, because all those songs have never ever been performed. Maybe one has been. We had one little show at a heavy metal birthday party back in the day, and that was the only White Woods show that ever happened. But it's one of those things where I don't really know I knew that it appealed to me, and I think everybody that makes something, they're always the first audience of anything. I mean, you could draw something, you could write something. It's always you. You're the one that is you're the listener, or you're the watcher, whatever. And if it makes you feel something, then it's got a chance at making somebody else feel something. And I do remember when we were putting together those songs that it was touching a button inside that had never been touched before. This is sounding a little sleazy in a way. But you know what I mean? There's something that I remember looking back on my youth at that moment, and the world was gone. That world, it didn't exist anymore. But I was being reminded of it because of sites like Tumblr, Twitter, all of these social media platforms where I was seeing things that I hadn't seen since I was 10. And I was like, wow, that was amazing. Or you'd hear a beat or a bass line or a synth, and it harkened back to like a roller rink that you went to for some birthday party, or it had all these elements that were, you know, being stirred up inside of me and Scott too. And I think maybe that's what the connection might be about with other people, is that they have their own childhood, their own adolescence. It's different. Everybody's is different, but we all still, you know, have those memories, you know, if we're lucky.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Like nostalgia, a lot of people kind of deride it as a marketing trick, but I think it's like you reach a certain point in your life where some people talk about it operating in 30-year cycles, but where you kind of look back on your formative years when you had less stress and less worries, and you think about the things that were, like a warm cuddle, a warm embrace of the past when you were younger. And I think it does something to people that's quite powerful. And yeah, I don't know. Like for me, growing up in the 80s, I can remember the actual reality of the 80s in the UK. And it was people constantly worried about unemployment. There were big strikes. There were riots. There was the fear of war with the East, you know, like the Cold War hadn't gone away and things like that. So it wasn't all rosy. But I can also remember that the culture that we were fed at the time, those amazing American films that we kind of looked at, things like Goonies, that gave you that kind of, you know, illusion of, like something a bit more glamorous and a bit more exciting. And it probably was a more optimistic time culturally, at least, perhaps. But I don't know. Tom, you're slightly younger.
Yeah, I'm only slightly younger.
The both of you.
I was born in 89, so I was around for two months of the 80s. But I think nostalgia is therapeutic. I think like the what you were talking about was a lot of it's about kind of processing your childhood, not just like pointless kind of member berries. It's like it's kind of exploring how uncanny nostalgia is, or like these sudden moments of recollection to being this, I heard this song at this very specific place at a time when I'd like, you've kind of only just kind of become fully sentient and kind of aware of your surroundings and stuff, and then you know some of those memories become core memories. And I think Vaporwave is really good at exploring those things. I was wondering, like, what are there some specific kind of nostalgia touch points? Are there some kind of musical or kind of film touch points that you are kind of exploring in the early White Woods records? Like what music and media are you kind of referencing specifically?
I would answer that and say it's not specifically some piece of music or media. I think it's specifically where I'm from, Richmond, Virginia. The place, the malls around here, the just the type of the type of America that exists in this particular spot that comes across in that, in that stuff, that old stuff. It's, you could say, yeah, it sounds, you know, you obviously love, you know, old Roland synthesizers and drum machines and all the things that the 80s gave you. But I almost look at it like a, as an artifact of a particular place for me, because I still live in Richmond. My family's from here. I grew up here and I moved away a long time, but I came back when I started a family. And there's just something about this particular area that remembers the world that the Whitewoods videos depict. And I think there's a difference between, you know, England and America. There's this huge, even though there's a lot of similarities, obviously, but we're just completely, you know, immersed in cheers and smiles, and there's some kind of unending optimism that we believe it, you know, like there's a type of like a utopia in our minds of the perfect childhood. And I think that's where I come from, in a way.
Do you think that's tied into the kind of American dream mindset?
That, well, yeah, and nightmare for some people. I mean, it's a dream and a nightmare.
Sure.
Some people look at it and like, oh, gosh, you know, we didn't go to church in the '80s. We went to the mall. You know, we didn't. Well, I mean, we eventually went to church, but it was just. I don't know, you know. I mean, what do you guys think about America from your side of the pond? There's like a delusional quality to some Americans, right? Like you want to believe things that just aren't really that realistic. You can kind of live in a world of Disney make-believe.
I think like a lot of times the service culture is very different. So like we've spent a bit of time in the States recently for things like Flamingo Fest and Econ, and like because of the tipping culture and stuff, and I guess other reasons, like hospitality reasons, like you know, like waiters are so positive and they kind of want to be your friends, and like us as kind of more reserved, right? British people, like, what is going on here? And obviously, like, you know, they just want tips, but like there is probably something more genuine as well. Like they're kind of more bubbly and optimistic and stuff. And then like I think, like, I mean, you know, the UK is a very diverse place, but there is something a little bit more reserved in general about British culture. And like, yeah, the service culture is very different, even, you know, putting aside the tipping's not really a thing. I think, like, you know, server's not going to tell you their name and their story, you know, they're just going to take your order and bring your food. It's more matter of fact. Mm. I don't know what that represents.
I think America's larger than life to me. I just feel like we obviously nowadays we're able to travel, and through being involved in the vaporwave and synthwave scenes, I've done quite a lot of traveling in America and met a lot of people from that side of the pond. And it's different. Like, people are different. Like we bond in many ways, but, and the language being one, the commonality of that, but there's definitely a cultural difference there, and it feels larger than life. And a lot of the people that you meet who are American definitely have louder personalities. Maybe that optimism and stuff that you were talking about there does come across to some degree, and we can probably seem quite reserved and quiet by comparison in some respects, I suppose. But I think there's something nice about it. Like you said, it's not, when I said the American dream, I used it with inverted commas. I know that everyone's reality is not the same, and I know that not every dream comes true. Like it's not that I'm taking it at face value. It's just that in some respects, having an optimistic outlook isn't a bad thing. You can be aware of the kind of challenges and the systemic problems that are out there, but I think having an optimistic mindset is a good thing, and we could do well to adopt some of that over here to some degree. Have I hedged my bets?
Yeah, I hear you. I think the way I look back on it, America, especially just in the 80s and 90s, the whole 20th century, it's just a bunch of, we were all guinea pigs. And I think the rest of the world is now a guinea pig too. But whatever the technology over here and the mass media, you know, Hollywood, all the things that were new in the 20th century, it was like a super injection over here. And there's, you know, we all kind of come out of it differently. You know, it's some of that loud American attitude is, you know, a symptom of sort of brain damage in a way. You're just bombarded, your senses are completely bombarded from the moment you can look up. It's a stimulation in all directions. And I don't think people were ever, you know, I know people were never stimulated like that before, whether it's visually or anything. It was just, there was a lot of it, and we all got it pretty deep. And I feel like the whole world is like that now. Even though I haven't traveled the whole world, it just seems as though it's been exported, the culture. Yeah.
It's technology again, isn't it? You know, like we had 4 TV channels when I grew up, and some of them would cut off quite early in the evening. And I think in the last 20 or 30 years, we've definitely caught up with America in certain ways where, you know, kind of the advent of satellite television and the massive range of choice that you have in absolutely every form of media. We've moved into more of a presidential style of politics, which kind of encourages loud personalities to farm clicks and engagement. And like, we're not that different now over here. I think that the gaps that we kind of started talking about,
we've got a Richmond as well,
are lessening over time.
Yeah, you got a Richmond. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I haven't been to England or Wales, but one of these days, I got to see where it all started.
You're welcome to come and come and stay when you do. Oh, yeah. Show, especially
Your Flamingo Fest show. I heard that one well. I was just going to congratulate you on the Flamingo Fest. I heard.
Yeah,
Flamingo
Fest,
a huge success.
It was good. It was good. Yeah, we hoped to have you play the first one, and maybe we can talk about you possibly joining us for the second one. It would be great. It's quite a challenge organizing an event like that from over here. But with the help of Indy and the Utopia District crew and some of the volunteers from that team, it was awesome. It was just a lovely weekend to kind of bring the community back together. And I think we need to see more people doing it, especially since George has kind of said that he won't be doing Electronicon anymore, because that was, yeah. I think I met you the first time at the first Econ in New York. And it's kind of crazy that was like people who had been online friends meeting in real life for the first time. And it's sad to think that kind of thing won't happen again unless people put on shows that are big enough to attract a large kind of pool of people. So kind of got to keep
that's news to me. I hadn't heard that, but I'm glad I got to see everybody and meet everybody while it was still a thing.
This show, June the 1st in Richmond, looks like a cracker, though. FM Skyline, White Woods, Ray Barra, Frank Javsi, Fake Fever, Young Shiro, Be Careful, Jumper Kimmins on the visuals. Looks wicked.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, I have no idea what to expect other than what I've seen at previous shows. But we're gonna have a good time. That's really all I can tell you about it.
And we had a few questions come in as well. Yeah, we got a question from Derpa Derp. It's a great name. That's presumably the band kind of username. I've just copied and pasted some of these over. They've asked whether your kind of output and creativity over the years has been inspired by music that you grew up listening to. So it's kind of specifically stuff that you listened to as a kid, as opposed to wider cultural.
It all mixes. It's all one thing. My start in music, I think I told you this a long time ago when we were doing some kind of pre-interview for your documentary. But I started on pop music.
Yeah.
I started on MC Hammer and New Kids on the Block and all this stuff that was just, you know, bubblegum. You know, bubblegum was what got me the ear candy of bubblegum music. And then it progressed in the early 90s with the change in the music of that era. There was also a big revival of 60s and 70s music, which that probably influenced me more than any other music I could ever tell you about. I mean, I love pop music from any era, especially the 80s. But I think, you know, that old, finding my dad's record collection and being exposed to all of the artists from back then, that really turn me on, as they used to say.
What did you hear? What was being played when you were a kid? What was the kind of vibe that was being played?
Well,
by your parents?
My mom was strictly pop music of the day, you know, bubble. I guess I was closer with my mom when it comes to the music stuff because she was into pop music. But then my dad was into, you know, the Beatles, the Stones, the Doors, your regular average 60s pop icons, rock icons. But yeah, the music stuff is, it's all encompassing. As far as what it influences me, I don't even think about it as much anymore. I mean, it's... We're always influenced by other things, but I almost get influenced or inspired by things that aren't musical sometimes. Like, I'll just start thinking about lyrics in a way, and it won't have anything to do with music. You could start with anything to make a piece of music, really. That's it, really, yeah.
When we spoke for the Nobody Here film, like, we were talking about the early days, kind of. I think that you kind of came in through, like you said, like through the Tumblr kind of side of things. Yeah. And your music kind of sounds a lot like the chill wavy kind of stuff that was happening around a similar time. I don't know if that's a fair comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not
no.
sure how you feel about genre tags anyway.
Oh, it's a direct influence.
But like, what was it that was... Yeah, what was it that was special about kind of the scene, if you can call it that, at that time? Like, if we kind of lost any of that over the years?
I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know. I think it's the idea...
Be nostalgic. Come on, take us back.
That's what I always do. The bedroom musician, that was the hook that got me. You know, all those chill wave guys, the Neon Indian washed out people, and then the guys before them... You were, you know, Ariel Pink and John Mouse.
Yeah.
Those individuals, they were just regular guys that had access to something. Mac DeMarco, he's a guy that did the same kind of stuff, where you could make things on your own in your bedroom and then let other people hear it. I think that was just an empowering concept that attracted a lot of people who... I mean, I grew up in the era where everybody wanted to start a band and you had to add a drummer and a bass player and all that kind of stuff. And that's a big commitment. That's a big, you know, to meet in a place once, twice a week. And when you could do all the instruments yourself, when you could, you know, build these little sonic orchestras that you like to hear, that you might not have heard anywhere else, which is probably what those early songs are reminiscent of, is that it sounds familiar, but it was also a brand new thing at the time. And so you get the mixture of both elements of the old and the new that kind of give you that special sauce.
Yeah. It sounds to me like daydreaming. Like
I don't know if it's...
Like this stuff, like Ariel Pink, John Mouse, your own music. Like, it sounds like people in bedrooms sort of daydreaming of having access to like the kind of professional studio, you know, that major label acts would get into in the 80s and 90s. And it's like you're reconstructing that with consumer tools. And there's like this kind of really like gorgeous mix of high production values and like extreme lo-fi. And it has this kind of collage and kind of mixed media effect. And it's, you know, yeah, it's kind of, it's like a really beautiful juxtaposition.
Yeah, I can hear that. I think everybody, all those guys, we all wanted to be rock stars when we were kids. It was just, that's why we pick up a guitar or anything like that. But it was never going to happen the normal way for any of them. And then you get to the point where, or I did, where you just said, you know what, I'm just going to do it just to do it, just for me. I like doing it. I feel an impulse to make something, and there's no other requirement, really. You know, it was always out of reach. If you wanted to get into the music business just to make a record, you had to do so much to get a record deal. I mean, you're a record label, but a very different form of record labels than, you know, the traditional ones that we all grew up on. It's a
Yeah.
So it was just a point where you're like, you know, I'm just going to make it for me. And if other people, well, actually, I that's bullshit in a way. I mean, I didn't make it just for me. I remember specifically me and Scott talking like, no, this is the stuff that people will like. We're going to make something that is not just for us, but it's for us and them. That was, I'm kind of flashing back to it. I haven't thought about it in here. Mm-hmm.
He wasn't wrong, though, was he?
And it was a good move because we always did that. We would always make things, and we liked the stuff that we made. But, you know, nobody else was really going to be into it. But when we started doing this stuff, it was like, yeah, this is not just – we had another goal in mind, was also to be heard. So it's a funny contradictory thing. When you're making things, I mean, creativity, I don't understand it. I don't have any idea how it comes together. There's just something that's attractive about it and exciting about it. And I like to do it. Now I think most of my creative energy is mostly focused on my two kids and working with them, playing with them and spending time together. And the me time, as you know, the me time kind of takes a back seat to the family time. But when I get the me time, which every day I try to at least pick up my guitar, and otherwise I get cranky. And, you know, just get a little bit of that out, you know, just keeps me balanced and keeps me smiling, really. Because music is great.
I was going to say... talking about kids, like there is like a sense of kind of childlike wonder and playfulness like behind your whole sort of package, really. Like, say, we had a question in from Pale Pucello. I don't know how to say their name, but they're asking like what the significance is of Frodo the dog as the mascot. And I was wondering if that like kind of ties into like a sense of playfulness and like trying to kind of smuggle sort of humor and comedy like into your music.
Well, it I don't even remember how it started, because the it came out of that Beach Walk video, and I don't even remember when I decided to do it. But I think looking on it now, it's just not to be so serious. A lot of, you can make things seriously. And I think that the Mr. Eyes Wide Shut song is an example of, I guess, what you would classify as something more serious. But at the same time, you can't get bogged down by that. And I think music has always been, for me, a playful, fun experience, primarily. That's how I started it. And I also didn't really mind having a dog be the face, so my face could just stay hidden and invisible for the most part, because it's not something I'm that interested in. I like the anonymity. I like not, you know, I just prefer to have a mask on, which the Frodo puppet is a very effective one. And it also distinguishes, to talk a little bit like a record label, it distinguishes the brand a little, and it gives, you know, I like the Grateful Dead. They got their bear, mm-hmm. right? So Whitewoods, we can have a dog, and it'll do the same thing. I mean, I'm sure there's other ones too that have. Well, Iron Maiden has got that big old Frankenstein monster thing.
Yeah.
It fits in, especially with the videos and a lot of the, like we were talking about, nostalgia too. I mean, it works.
I mean, when we spoke to Van Porgum or Van Porm, I'm not sure how you pronounce his surname now. I've heard it said by a couple of different people in different ways recently. But he was talking about kind of that time on the internet in the kind of early 2010s where, you know, anonymity was very much, at the forefront, especially of scenes like Vaporwave. And it was kind of like the first genre where it really wasn't about selling anything. You weren't selling yourself as an individual. Okay, sure, a lot of the people making music, most people who make music might have like a kind of nascent dream to be a rock star or to be successful and have their music appreciated. But there's definitely something about that era that made it attractive to people to kind of hide their identity and let the music speak for itself. And that's kind of changed in the last few years in Vaporwave with the advent of more and more live performances. Like, are you going to carry that anonymity across now? Like, or do you have like a feeling about whether anything is compromised when you kind of step away from that anonymity and letting the music speak for itself and sort of become what's a bit more like a traditional pop star?
No, I think I haven't decided yet, but I when it goes for the live show, that to me is a separate thing than the internet content or the internet identity that we're all, you know, kind of get. Even if we're not in the public eye, if you're just a regular soccer mom posting pictures of her daughter's goals, we're all sort of putting ourselves on stage that way. That's the area that I mostly would rather steer clear of. But when it comes to playing a live show with people in the same room, I think that's when I would want to not be anonymous, and I don't think I'll carry on that whole thing on stage, because that's mostly about connecting with, you know, real people and real life. Yeah. And then there's no need to be anonymous. I see that as the only place I don't want to be anonymous is on a live stage, which I haven't really courted that experience for a long time. I used to really want it. I used to really, really want it. But I'll tell you something, that it was that first Electronicon that I went to. I had such a good time. I love seeing everybody on stage, this music that I'd only seen online in real life. But there was something about that experience that I realized that I wasn't chasing it anymore. I didn't want to chase it. If it was to happen, I wouldn't fight it. What we're going to do in a month here at the I2K Electronic Music Festival. But I was happy being just another face in the crowd and speaking to people and connecting in real life, just to anybody that happens to like similar things that would bring you to a place like that. That's good enough for me. Like, that's kind of the reward for it all.
When we turned up at that event, I had the same feeling. It was like, you've made this transition along with everyone else from something that was very, very much online. Sure, there'd been a couple of shows before in person, but it was like, if you looked at that crowd, it was like a sea of avatars dissolving into real faces, like people that you'd kind of felt like you knew, that you might have been talking to, like, or in our case, we possibly already done the first edition of Spaceship Earth at that point. And it's like, suddenly, like, all these people you've got these connections with, they're real people, and it's a genuine connection. I can see why, if you're in that space, you would want to kind of shelve the idea of anonymity. I think other people view it in a slightly different way with regards to kind of like letting go of the underground side of Vaporwave and reaching out for the mainstream, but I think that's kind of a separate issue here than just kind of like the consideration of how you'd personally transition from something that you do online to performing at something like I2K.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like you're chasing mainstream success.
Oh, no. But it's, who knows if you can even chase mainstream success anymore. I don't even think the mainstream is mainstream in a way. I don't even know what the mainstream is. I mean, I'm an old man by comparison to whatever anybody else is going to say.
Yes,
so whatever is mainstream, I don't have a clue. But I don't even think the mainstream is a real thing. I think it's mostly, it's curated by a lot of very wealthy companies and powerful executives. And it was true when I was a kid too. I mean, it's not like this is a new thing. Like, this is all, it's all kind of programmed popularity. Yeah, there are certain things that happen, certain blips that come out of nowhere and, you know, skyrocket to the top of the charts. Like, what was last year was that Richmond, North of Richmond.
Oh, yeah.
Song.
Yeah.
You guys hear that song by that
yeah,
guy?
Yeah, it was like the conservative like country was song, wasn't it?
A fluke. The conservative, yeah, right, right. A guy made a YouTube video and became a number one song in America for a couple of weeks. Like, that's an anomaly by most comparisons. Usually, whatever is number one, it's, you know, it's what's popular isn't necessarily what's coming from the ground up. It's mostly coming from the top down.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you could chase, you know, mainstream success from vaporwave, but if anybody could figure out how to do it, God bless, go for it. if that's what you want, that's what you want. It's mostly, I mean, I guess it either doing it for the love or you're doing it for the money when you want to go that route. So I don't know. I don't know. I when I was a kid, you know, you fantasize about it, but the older I got, I just it goes away where you start to see like, wow. If you really want to play Coachella and you want to be on this big, big stay, right? And all these strangers for the night cheering and singing your songs, that's a great goal to have, but it's a very fleeting thing to be number one. It's nothing that is going to last, or odds are, you know, you're never going to, you can't sustain it like you can something a little bit more achievable and personal, you know. I think starting a family is a way more rewarding concept to me as an older guy than it was obviously when I was 21.
Yeah,
for sure. I can relate to that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I mean,
what else we got, Tom?
I was kind of thinking, talking about, yeah, the concept of mainstream, kind of like what even is that anymore? Like, the mainstream was more of a thing when we were kids because there was more of a monoculture. Like, now everybody's got like a bespoke algorithm, don't they? So like, obviously, you know, there's Taylor Swift and Beyonce still exist, but like, you know, there were dozens of those in the 80s, and now it's a handful, isn't it? You know, and then the rest is like whatever the algorithm serves you, you know, for better or worse.
And it's tailored. Yeah, it's tailored as well, yeah.
Yeah.
But even right down to, I think I was talking to Alex from Pacific Plaza. He was saying that people think that X release that's come out the week before is number one on Bandcamp. But apparently the way we're fed the charts, is, so to speak, within Bandcamp tags, that's actually also tailored and algorithm based.
Yeah,
and it's kind of fed back to you and your locality. So like what you think is the number one selling vaporwave album of a week isn't necessarily that for everyone else, which is interesting.
It's not Rose Room by Donna Lenz.
It was good. It was good for one weekend. Definitely. It definitely got up there, mate. You're doing yourself down. Check out Rose Room by Donna Lenz.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. We're all in niches, right? Everything's a niche now. And, you know, you're kind of in your little silo wherever you are, and everybody gets... But that's cool because you get to really target people that you never would ever be able to connect with. You know, people in South America, Australia, China, everywhere. You can find everybody that way. And, yeah, you're never going to be... There's never going to be one global mainstream ever again, probably.
I mean, when we were packing, you get a snapshot of this by doing something like running a label. I do the spreadsheets, quite a boring detail here, but I organize the labels for the records that are going out each week, and I can see where we sent your record the other week. So we sent obviously a lot to America, a lot within the EU and UK, but there were some random countries. We sent one of your records to Saudi Arabia.
Oh,
like there's a worldwide audience that Vaporwave taps into that's possible because of the internet and the way these communities work, which is kind of crazy to think that people in certain countries, you know, it's come sometimes there'd be very random destinations that we're sending stuff to that you wouldn't necessarily think would have anywhere near the numbers to sustain a local event or a scene. But, you know, the way we operate now, global kind of shipping enables us to, reach people in very far-flung places.
That's great. I was just...
Yeah, you have a fan in Saudi Arabia.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's amazing. I think it's just amazing that we can talk like this and you're in England and I'm in America, because I remember having to, you know, dial long distance to talk to somebody across the world, and it would cost you $100 to do something like that. Now it's just taken for granted that you could pick up the phone and call Saudi Arabia or wherever, let alone send your record to somebody over there. And it's somehow spinning on a turntable over. I picture it as a big desert, but I know it's probably got other places there.
Yeah, we've got a nice quote from you in the past saying, talking about technology and connection being something that you feel strongly about and something that sort of Vaporwave has enabled.
Oh, yeah.
Enzo, I don't know what the context of that was. Was that in discussion for the film?
Yeah, I think it was. No, I think I found it in an article that you'd done. But we kind of talked about it when we were doing that interview for the film. And I think it was kind of comes back to what we were chatting about a minute ago about kind of tech removing the barrier to entry for stuff. And so, you know, suddenly at this time, technology and connection bringing people together that weren't able to do so before. And it just felt like a kind of a new horizon that people hadn't kind of even got to terms with yet at that time. It was like a brave new era.
Oh.
Like, do you still feel that way? Has it panned out that way?
Yeah, well, technology is probably one of the biggest shapers of everyone, especially now. And it's a cliche to say it's a double-edged sword, but it is. There is a promise of technology, and then there's a warning. But I do believe it... I guess maybe it's the American side. I do feel optimistic about what technology is capable of bringing to everybody. There's as far as music goes, I mean, the stuff you can do with AI and stem separation is really changing the game for how I look at making new songs. Like, you can, instead of in the old days, you'd have to just find an instrumental 12 inch and hopefully, you know, have a good little snuff sample and make a good song out of it. And that was the whole song. You weren't going to be able to just take the drums. You had to take the whole thing. You had to take the bass. You had to take the synths. You had to take everything. But now if you just hear a drum beat, you can just take that drum beat and make something completely new around it. You don't need any of the other instruments. Or you like a particular bass sound, you can isolate the bass, sample that, and then play a new bass line with that exact same bass sound. And so that to me is really promising. And obviously the promise of the internet is, you know, more connection globally to anybody that seems to care about music and the stuff we particularly specialize in. That to me is a good thing. The bad stuff about it, I don't know. I try not to think about it as often, but there's always going to be bad things around technology. But at this point, we're all living in some kind of upgrade. There's something that's happening to our species that is we're human plus something else, and it's an iPhone in your pocket kind of a plus, where I don't know where it's going to go to. I mean, I suppose people will wear things in the future that do the same thing as a smartphone does today. But it has this strange effect that it both connects people more than they've ever connected to each other before, but at the same time distancing us from the people around us in a strange way. So that's the double-edged sword part about it. I think we all have to find our balance when it comes to these machines that we're immersed in now. Mm. It used to just be a radio player or a television set, but with the ability to beam information out of your home to anybody else's home, I mean, that changed everything as far as I can tell. Like, you could get information that you could never get in other ways, and you could hear music that you've but never ever been exposed to in a previous era. So here's hoping for the best.
That's that American optimism.
Yeah, I mean, are you a little bit more, do you agree or?
Yeah, we're doomed.
We're doomed? You think AI is the end of it all?
Agree entirely.
My brother definitely thinks AI is the end of the world. Like, this is a conversation that comes up all the time. Like, any kind of use of AI like disturbs and concerns him. Like I've talked to him, I've tried to present other perspectives on it, like, you know, like it can be a tool that supports the creative process, etc., etc. But he kind of comes back to this hard line, which is that technology was supposed to make our lives easier. Now it seems like they're developing tech to do the fun stuff, and we still have shit jobs, which is maybe
it's not like the Jetsons, maybe, is it?
Yeah, a hyperbleak view. No, it's not. It's definitely not. We're not all sat back enjoying our leisurely time while robots do all the hard work. It's definitely, yeah.
Yeah, but then definitely the changed. AI stuff that you can get away with, I mean, just what is it, the prompts with Midjourney and all these other things that you can type a sentence in and it will give you a picture back, or ChatGPTs of the world.
You can get whole songs now.
Whole songs.
You can get whole songs. Right. It's crazy. Yeah, like I think Chaz, SPF 420 Chaz, has done an album where it seems like he sent it to me the other day. But he's been posting stuff online, and there's this whole like joke at the moment about I found this record on in a flea market, and there's no listing for it on Discogs anywhere, but look, it's amazing. And it's like, yeah, this music's been created by prompts, and someone's put some creative art together, and we can pretend that it's a record that was kind of a lost artifact from a previous era. And in a way, I think that's pretty fucking vaporwave.
It is, yeah.
Because you're giving it a backstory and you're putting it in a conceptual new environment. And I think it, you know, there's a place for it there. But I can see why people have concerns to some degree as well.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, what about you? What about your kids? Are you very screen time concerned, or are you a little bit more screen time fluid when it comes to things like iPads?
I started off being one of those dads who was like, well, we're not going to sit them down in front of the iPad. We're going to like have family time where we all have dinner together. And it very quickly became apparent that sometimes you just need to be able to get on with dealing with hot pans and stuff like that. And so if you can stick him in front of a screen for 2 minutes, it has to be done.
Yeah.
Like, we try and get her reading and doing other stuff. I'm not completely like mad about it. We don't plonk her in front of the TV on her own for ages or anything like that.
Right.
But, you know,
yeah,
it's hard. It's hard. Like, Tom, you must feel the same with Rye. Like,
yeah, it's yes. Screen time fluid's a nice description. And yeah, making sure that it's like good stuff on it, not garbage.
Yeah, same. Definitely that. Yeah. There's some absolute shit on YouTube that Poppy gets completely falls in love with, like kids opening presents, but not really playing.
Really
with them.
Like, spoiled kids. Very spoiled.
Yeah, yeah. I think we know that you've probably seen the same video. So yeah. I've been getting her into Studio Ghibli stuff. We've been watching a lot of like My Neighbor Totoro and Kiki's Delivery Service, like stuff I feel like nostalgic about watching, and beautifully animated, nice stories. Feels a little less kind of threatening than someone just having all of the toys that they want right now.
Yeah, I've seen those videos. Yeah, I'm aware.
What's the story behind bug your parents, like on this topic of fatherhood?
That was a question from Leira, wasn't it,
as the social media handle? Yeah. What's that all about?
Thank you for everybody that sent questions in, by the way. I just want to say that the story behind that, I was bugging my parents when I came up with that name. That was probably one of the earliest. Oh, I now remember. That was when we had this idea that we wanted to start our own record label. Scott and I had talked about it, and I had a couple of friends that were recording stuff too. This was when Scott and I, we were recording separately. Like, I was recording separate stuff. He was recording his own stuff. And we had another friend, Brent, who had made some Aerial Pink style albums. And I think we had that name was the umbrella name that we gave to our our label, with the hopes of maybe some kind of MP3 blog would stumble across the website and give it a listen. It never panned out or anything like that. But I always liked the words together. I never heard them before until it popped in my head one day that, you know, there's a lot of, you were talking about punk and how vaporwave is kind of a digital internet version of punk, the whole idea of empowerment through technology. But there's also the whole idea of, you know, sawed off your parents or whatever, you know, you would say, you know, people hate it, or like God Save the Queen ideas. which I never liked. I never really could go all the way with it and say, you know, fuck the parents, fuck my parents, fuck everybody. They're all that kind of vibe I never could get down with. However, I also couldn't get down with people that just did everything that their parents told them to do and just blindly followed their parents without ever asking any questions about reality. So the idea to just bug your parents, it's kind of an in-between state where you're not, you know, you're not disowning your parents or never talking to them again. But there's just a little bit of, I guess you're just bucking back a little bit just to keep them on their toes and show them there's a new way of looking at reality. And that's kind of the job of every new group of humans that comes around, is that you're seeing the world differently because it's a totally new time. And, you know, my parents are probably like everybody else's parents where they, you know, by the time you're around, they sort of have the way they look at things solidified in a lot of ways. And I hope that when I'm older and my kids are older, I can remember that and learn from them and listen to the things that they're saying more that might challenge my beliefs and opinions about anything.
Yeah.
So that was the idea behind Bug Your Parents. And then it just kind of stuck around, you know. I don't know. Now it's, we got White Woods is a name. Bug Your Parents is another name. Frodo the dog is another. It's kind of like, you know, an in-joke system where you sort of have to follow the breadcrumb trails of whatever we did to see what it is. So that's kind of a long-winded answer, but that's all I got.
Love it. I was when I saw the question, I was thinking, I wonder if there's much behind this that beyond, like, it's a nice play on words. But I'm glad we asked. Shout out to Leero for the question there.
Yeah.
Have you got anything else from you, Tom?
Yeah, just, I mean, I think we should wrap it up soon, but just kind of speaking for lots of people, I'd love to see physicals for things that aren't Spaceship Earth. Like, I don't know if there's plans for Wax of Play the Game or, you know, making the Wizards, you know, more available.
Oh.
Like, have you got plans for physicals?
No plans for that. We do get that sometimes, and it could happen. But as far as that goes, I don't know. Thanks for bringing up the Wizard Rescored. I put that out last year as kind of an experimental video, which couldn't be uploaded to YouTube for copyright reasons. Which that's a whole other, I don't know if people talk about that still with Vaporwave, but copyright is another big thing that I think Vaporwave sort of throws the middle finger up at and gets away with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that the physical stuff, I don't have any plans for it. Mostly because I'm just going to put together this live set and see what happens after. I'd like to record some new songs that I have. I've been writing songs sometimes when I can. I got a few. Maybe I'll record some new stuff, but Play the Game, I could see that going. It's kind of a long album though. That's like a 60 minute album. I don't even know if you could fit it on a record. You might have to cut some.
That'd be a double. Yeah, 57 minutes.
57? Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, I don't know. If you guys want to go for it, I'm sure you can sell some.
Yeah, I think that got my favorite track it doesn't have song. Yeah, Somber Waves. That's my favorite track that's not on Spaceship Earth by Miles. I think Cat System Corp sampled the same source material for in News at 11. I may be wrong. I may be butchering that, but I was kind of reacquainted with it this week when I was prepping, getting myself in the mindset to talk to you again. And I had that track on quite a lot the last few days. Something really something almost harrowing about the music, but I guess that's deliberate. Yeah. If you look at the track name,
it's a different sound, isn't it?
That you wrote. Yeah. It's beautiful. Well, it's beautiful, but quite haunting.
Well, give it up to Dan Siegel, who made the Weather Channel music that was sampled from that. He's the guy that put it all together.
Oh yeah,
I really just added some extra stuff.
I figured it was something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. It was basically
you recontextualized it. It's very Vaporwave.
Well, the Weather Channel was always on when I was a kid, And I must have heard that song 50 times growing up. And when I found it, it had dropped in my lap as just the next obvious song to do. And I don't remember much else other than about 4 or 5 years later, Dan Segel, the guy that made it, he contacted me after he took down the entire album off of Spotify for copyright reasons. And I had to negotiate a little payment with him so that we could keep the music online. And we put his name in the credits, which I was really happy to have him on there. And he was a really nice guy from my limited interaction with him. Just want to give him the credit for doing some of that stuff. But we're going to play that. I think I'm going to play that song at the show, because I always
I wish I could be there.
The slow song. Well, if we do another Flamingo Fest, I'll play it there too. Be great.
Well, let's chat offline, my friend. Let's chat offline. Right. And we can also chat about some of the other stuff with Physicals. I'd love to work with you again. I'm a massive fan of your music, and it's always a pleasure. So,
yeah. Well, I appreciate you doing all the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
It really means a lot that that you guys do all that hard work over there and hooking everybody up like that. So I really appreciate you.
It's an archiving thing, isn't it? Like, I know a lot of people might have kind of, especially in the early days when labels first started shipping vinyl and stuff like that in the vaporwave scene, I think people might have been suspicious of it as being like a cash grab. There's not an awful lot of money to be made in doing niche music like this, but there's an essential archiving role. And if you come at it from a fan's perspective, which I think every label in the scene does, then you're just proud to have been a part of making a permanent record, a physical record of this music that's really special. And these links aren't going to be there forever. Like, one day you'll go to click on a Bandcamp link and it'll be dead and it'll be gone. But somehow that music will always be in your record collection, or hopefully on Spotify and other places. But, you know, archiving, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's important.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, no, it's doubly important. I'm a collector too. And I think it's great that, you know, people have the ability to actually hold the stuff that they really like and love.
Yeah, man. Well, lovely place to end, unless you've got anything else, Tom.
No, all good.
Really had a good time chatting with you chaps over there. And
yes, next time I speak to you properly will be no doubt when we're sending you a copy of the film.
I can't wait to see what you guys do. I got my VHS tape secured with the Kickstarter that you guys had.
Yes.
I can't wait to pop that into my VCR one day and see what you guys are able to. With the story that you're telling.
I mean, there's been times when we've been worried about it. We've been worried with the speed of the progress. I know people wanted updates, but there's no point in giving updates that aren't confirmed. But like, I've spent literally the last 3 or 4 weeks absolutely flat out on script editing and putting together all of the best bits from all of the many, many interviews we did. And Chris is doing like flat out shifts, editing and piecing it all together. There's still quite a lot of work together, but excuse me, we're pretty confident that we can get this out pretty soon.
Well, you're telling everybody's story. It's a big task, but you're also telling your own story, and I know that you want to make it all right. So take as much time as you need to do it. It's a mammoth undertaking, and I'm sure whatever you come away with, everybody will appreciate it.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I'm sure they won't.
Yeah.
I mean, just the fact that it exists. I mean, who else is going to make a vaporwave documentary? Yeah. I mean, George Clanton isn't going to do it. Nobody else is going to do it. And I just think that anybody that's going to contribute that much time, energy, effort, money, everything that goes into it, no matter what the result is at the end, I applaud it. Because it would not exist any other way if it weren't for what you guys are continuing to do and have done these past couple of years getting it together. So, you know.
Well, we do appreciate it. And it just fills our like hearts with warmth, shall we say, because it's, you know, it's a scene that's gone on for more than a decade. So many diverse strands, so many people that you could possibly speak to. It's very difficult to narrow that down into something. And there's going to be lots of people, I'm sure, who are like, but you didn't speak to this or you didn't talk about that. And we're just doing the best we can. And I hope people really appreciate it and know that it was made with love. And yeah, we'll have more on that because we're getting the director in for an episode of the podcast soon. So we'll have a good chat with him and give people a bit more concrete updates on how it's progressing. But cool.
All right, guys. Well,
and I will speak to you soon offline as well.
All right. That sounds great. I hope you guys get some sleep and I look forward to our chats in the future.
Yeah, man. Take care and the best of luck with your show next month.
All right, guys. Thank you.